Good evening and welcome to a very special forum. This was recorded on Martin Luther King Day 2017 at Friendship Baptist Church in Kansas City, Missouri, on the afternoon prior to the mass celebration held at that church. This event was co-sponsored by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference of Greater Kansas City and the American Friends Service Committee. The first voice you hear will be that of the American Friends Service Committee's Ira Harrett, who will be retiring this year.
Good afternoon. My name is Ira Harrett. I'm the program coordinator for the American Friends Service Committee, and it has been my privilege for working with AFSC to help organize this event for over 10 years. However, sadly, this will be the last forum organized by the American Friends Service Committee because our office will be closing this summer. But I am confident that SCLC and other community members will continue presenting this information and this discussion of Dr. King and how his vision and his message can help stimulate action and change today. Over the years, we have focused the forum on Dr. King's call for racial justice. But that was just part of what we focused on, as essential as that is. We also focused the forum on his words on economic justice and an end to U.S. militarism at home and abroad. I remember Dr. King saying, "What good is it having the right to sit at a lunch counter if you can't afford to buy a hamburger?" I also remember him saying, in regards to U.S. reliance on might and militarism, that he called the United States the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. That was in his lifetime. And he noted that a nation that continues to year after year spend more on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Unfortunately, these evils, these ills, still exist and continue in our society, and in fact, in many ways, have increased. I remember the breadth of Dr. King's call for a revolution of our values, to remind us that all of our challenges are interconnected. All of our challenges are embedded in systems of racism, materialism, militarism, and economic injustice. They are embedded in systems of privilege that serve the rich and powerful, and that seek to divide and conquer us by weakening all of us. So we hold this forum today after the election of Donald Trump as our president, and with the increase of and the greater visibility of hate speech and hate violence, with the increase of scapegoating of Muslims, immigrants, the poor, and other marginalized groups, we hold this forum with the knowledge that too many of our neighbors or even family members have found the wrong targets to blame for their fears or their suffering. We hold this forum aware of a history of economic injustice and the abandonment of communities of color, and with the goal of working to reverse this abandonment with economic investment through the establishment of a 1/8 cent sales tax that you'll hear more about today. And I'll just maybe break at this time to note that on the end table over here on my left, your right, is information about that sales tax and ways that you can support it. And finally, before we hear from our panel members, I encourage you to visit the tables all around the room to learn about the work that these organizations are doing and discover ways that you can contribute to that work. That work that will help realize the ideal of Dr. King's beloved community. And further on some of your chairs and information in the back is an invitation to individuals or leaders with organizations that are concerned about the things that I've talked about. We invite you to attend a gathering to explore our common concerns and the common agenda that we can have to work together and create a unified front of action. And that event will take place on Tuesday, January 31st from noon to 2 p.m. We encourage you to also complete the feedback forms or comment cards that are on many of your tables or can be found at the AFSC table back here. On the reverse of that is the opportunity to sign up to RSVP for that January 31st meeting. Now, before we go on with the panel, though, I would like to call Dr. Vernon Howard up, SCLC. We are very thankful to partner with SCLC every year to host this forum and to be part of their important work. So, Dr. Howard?
Ira, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
It is a pleasure to be here. We want to thank the Friendship Baptist Church, Pastor Terrence, the officers and members of Friendship for welcoming us to this space on tonight to have this very important forum and, of course, the mass celebration. We thank Friendship for this. We are thankful to you. We're thankful to Ira Herrett and the American Friends Services Committee of Greater Kansas City for its continued work, even though the organization has found itself here locally in the throes of a transition. Does not mean that those principles and the work, and hopefully Ira himself, will remain here in Kansas City and continue to be a voice and a presence and energy around issues of justice and equality. Ira, we say to you, we appreciate your work and thank you for all that you do. We appreciate it. We have got an outstanding panel here that will speak, so I'm going to get out of the way and be quiet. We want you to please consider remaining with us throughout the rest of the evening for our 6 o'clock mass celebration that will be in the sanctuary. We are so excited for this celebration this year and so excited on how SCLC is combining its celebration with activism and advocacy. We have tried very hard to be at the forefront of issues that impact our people. We believe that we have. You will hear more about that at 6 o'clock and at the mass celebration. Before we do that, a word about the 1/8 cent sales tax. Kansas City has in fact come together, and all of the communities have, to be very successful in making sure that zoos are financed, animals are housed, downtown is developed, Plaza is safe and developed, Southtown is in good shape and growing and booming, Northtown is in good shape and well and healthy and growing. But there is an area we cannot forget that this 1/8 cent sales tax is focusing on: redevelopment in the center city. And so we hope you will join us with your energy, with your efforts, with your heart, your wisdom, and your gifts, so that we can be not two cities, one well, but one sick, one remembered, but one forgotten. We hope that you will join us in making us one city of Kansas City, Missouri, where all of us are well and all of us thrive. And that is our goal. God bless you. Thank you for being here tonight. And we turn it back over to Ira.
Thank you, Dr. Howard. What I'd like to do now is to introduce all of our panel members, and then I will ask them to just come to the podium and share their introductory remarks. After those remarks, we will invite you to ask questions from the audience. We would like this event to be purposeful in that we hope that you will find ways that you can roll up your sleeves and take action, that you can join with others to create or to stimulate a vision of our community and society, one that works for everyone. And so please ask questions that will help all of us accomplish that goal or provide you with the information that you need so that you can take part. So our panelists on my extreme right is our first panelist will be Micah Kubik, who is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Kansas and has worked for over 15 years on civil rights and civil liberties issues. Micah. And then next is Nubia Estefez, who's a community organizer in the Kansas area for El Centro, focusing on undocumented community and bringing education, social, and economic learning opportunities to all community members. Nubia. And then we have Musa El-Bayoumi, who is the board chair of the Kansas chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. The council is the largest Muslim civil liberties and advocacy organization in America. And we have Karen Curls to my left, who is a member of the Urban Summit and Freedom Incorporated, and is a principal of Curls Judd Joseph Property Group, and is on the faculty of the Penn Valley Community College, the social science chair. And we have Margaret May, who's executive director of the Ivanhoe Neighborhood Association. She's been working for the Ivanhoe for 15 years after retiring from 30 years of service to the Social Security Administration and is a strong proponent for the 1/8-cent sales tax. Okay. And finally, we have Don Maxwell, who was the developer of the Linwood Shopping District. He's the former president of the Community Development Corporation, which worked with 70 small minority enterprises. He retired, but then now he's back at it and returned to redevelop the 31st and Prospect development. So, Micah.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. No, y'all can do better than that. I know it's cold and wet outside, but you're dry and inside, so you ought to be happier than that. Good afternoon. Much better, thank you. I'm very happy to be here with you this afternoon to celebrate the legacy and the vision of Dr. King. Usually at this time of year, when Dr. King's holiday rolls around, my message to people is usually that we should not whitewash the legacy and the vision of Dr. King, that we should be cautious and mindful and good guardians of the legacy to stop the folks who want to claim it and turn it into something else. You know the kind of folks I'm talking about, the ones who want to say that they support the concepts of equality and freedom and justice, even though they would have happily been on the directing side of the fire hydrants and police dogs. The folks who want to say that one half of one sentence about the content of character in one speech, one time, means that if Dr. King were alive today, he would oppose affirmative action or the Black Lives Matter movement. You know the folks I'm talking about, the ones who want to claim Dr. King's legacy for his own, for their own. And normally, that's who I tell you to be scared of at this time of year. Normally, I say that that's the greatest threat. I'm not going to say that this year, because this year I'm not worried about the folks who claim that they support Dr. King's vision and then do something else entirely. This year I'm worried about the folks who don't even pretend. This year I'm worried about the folks who don't even pretend that they embrace the vision of freedom and equality and injustice. I'm worried about the folks who go out there and are loud and proud about the fact that they want to make America the 1890s again. That's who I'm worried about. And make no mistake about it, they are resurgent, they are emboldened, they are empowered, and worst of all, they are in power. You don't have to look very hard to find it either. You don't have to look hard at all. You ain't got to be a detective to see it. You see it in the fact that hate crimes are way up. You see it in the fact that We spent the Martin Luther King weekend arguing about whether or not John Lewis was talk or action. I thought for a little bit about telling folks that we ought to send copies of the book that John Lewis wrote, Walking with the Wind, you know, to make the point, maybe if somebody read about it. But then people reminded me that the president-elect is very proud of the fact that he does not read, and so I thought instead we should send copies of the DVD Selma instead. Maybe he'll watch the movie and see action rather than talk. You don't have to look very hard to find it. You can see it in the folks who are being named to the cabinet of the United States. When I look at this cast of characters, all I can think about is the movie Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and the Island of Misfit Toys, because that's what this group is. It's a bunch of misfits, folks who don't fit in, who are so hostile to the Constitution, who are so hostile to the values that define our country, who are so inexperienced and unqualified, they wouldn't fit in anywhere else. They are the Island of Misfit Toys. And you have to look no further than the fact that the next Attorney General of the United States will be a stone-cold racist who made his reputation on voting rights, not in using the power of the federal government to defend the right to vote, but rather using the power of the federal government to prosecute and persecute folks who were trying to get black folk registered in Alabama in the 1980s. It is shocking, it is appalling, it's terrible that just now, when the federal courts are finally intervening to make sure that voting rights are once again guaranteed in this country, we will lose the ally that we had in the Department of Justice. Instead of the federal government intervening to make sure that people have the right to vote, it's going to be there on the side of the vote restrictors and suppressors, and that's a shame. That's a real shame. And all of that ought to be enough to make you want to cry. It certainly makes me want to cry sometimes, but then I think that we have to see through our tears, because ultimately crying is not going to fix anything. Crying isn't going to fix anything. It doesn't change yourself, much less the world around you. Crying is perhaps cathartic, but ultimately it's just inward looking. It's inward facing. It doesn't do anything in the world. And so I say that instead of crying, we have to cry out. We have to cry out. Instead, because when you cry out, you're taking action. You're declaring what you will stand for. You are mobilizing. And most of all, when you cry out, you are summoning help. I don't care where you think your help comes from. It doesn't come unless you cry out. And so that's why I say, as we face this vista of attacks on civil liberties and civil rights, as we face what is to come, we can't just cry. Crying isn't going to change it. We cannot cry, we shall not cry, we must not cry, but we must instead cry out.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me? My name is Nubia Steffes, and it's really hard to go right after Micah. But like I said, I am a community organizer from El Centro in Kansas City, Kansas area. And I am also a member of the Kansas Missouri Dream Alliance. It's in Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm gonna tell you a little bit of my story. I came to the United States when I was 3 years old. I came, I was undocumented. I came through the line. My mother paid somebody to smuggle me in. And while my mother, her sister, my niece and nephew, her niece and nephew came through the border. They had to do all the hard stuff. I was just asleep. I didn't know I was undocumented until I was maybe about 16. I knew something was wrong with us because every time when my mom would be driving, she would say, siéntate, siéntate, sit down, the police is right behind us. So I would have like, oh God, you're gonna sit down, because what if my mom gets pulled over? And then I knew why she was scared. She was scared because she didn't have any papers. She didn't have a driver's license. She didn't have anything to tell the police officer, hey, I'm okay to be here. So once my mom did get pulled over, she stopped driving. So that was the end of that for my mom, for driving. So I was really lucky to get my green card through my stepfather, like fast forward a few years now. I was 17, about to be 18, when I got my green card. It was pure luck, really pure luck, because since my mother was undocumented, I had no other way of getting my proper documents except for my stepdad, who was able to apply for my status with my mom. So by like a few, I think it was 6 months before I would have been cut off, I was able to get my green card. And then I was able to apply for my citizenship as soon as I was able to. So that's how I'm lucky. Unfortunately, that's not the same for a lot of my community members or my family members. My husband, who we've been married for 5 years, is still undocumented. Even though he's married to a US citizen, even though we have 2 US citizen daughters, he's still undocumented. And people say, well, let's just go ahead and wait for that line. The line is not realistic. It's broken and it's not working for my community. So like I said, I'm a community organizer at El Centro, and our mission is to strengthen communities and improve the lives of Latinos and others through educational, social, and economic opportunities. And that's what I do every day. No matter who walks through the door, I make sure they know their rights, and I am able to fight for whatever issue they could be. It could be from not getting their ID. It could be whose son is in deportation proceedings. Another thing that I specialize is in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the DACA. I don't know if you guys are familiar with DACA. Perfect. So back in 2012, I was working with the local Dreamers, and we were petitioning, we were marching, we were calling, we were pushing, and thankfully, we were able to get the deferred action, which is a great win for my community. I mean, I was just so excited when that happened. We were at my friend's house, who's a local attorney, and we were just crying. We saw so many opportunities go up, right? And we've been able to reach so many opportunities. I do the DACA clinic at El Centro for free every Tuesday night with local attorney help. So after the elections, you could have seen how heartbroken I was. And I did cry. I cried a lot, like drastically a lot of crying, because I knew how awful this is going to be for us. And I might cry right now because it's so realistic for us. It's so realistic that come in a week or so, that could be taken away from us. It could be taken, all the hard work could be taken away from us just right away, right before our eyes. But one thing that I could make sure for a deferred action is that I'm fighting. We're fighting. As soon as November 10th came over, I got myself back up. I went to my office and I started emailing everybody. We need to get together and we need to have a plan, because that's how we're gonna get through this. So along with the ACLU, we're gonna be starting doing Know Your Rights training. I've been informing all of our participants, all of our students, everybody that I know of, what could we do to protect our rights. Also, the Kansas Missouri Dream Alliance will be doing a deportation defense for our community. And I have to explain this to my mom, because my mom is a little bit older. So everything that she hears in the news, she calls me, is this true? Is this going to happen to us? Is this what's going on? So I am, the point of that is a lot of my community sometimes is misinformed, and we have to make sure we know where to get the right information for them. They're scared. My mom's scared, our whole community is scared about what's going to happen, and we have to make sure we're out there fighting for them. Just like we fought for DACA, we need to keep fighting for our parents and our community. So I invite you all, if you guys can, to follow us at El Centro. It's on social media, Facebook, or join our website, just to kind of follow up on the work we'll be doing. And thank you so much for having me here.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I greet you with the greeting of Islam. May the peace of God, His mercy, and blessings be with you and upon you. Thank you all for inviting me here, and I'm honored to be part of this distinguished panel. And I'm here, as you heard in the introduction, representing the Kansas chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, which our mission and introduction defined it as the largest and the oldest civil liberties and advocacy group for American Muslims. But I wanted to start by saying that that doesn't define us exactly correct. Our mission, the way it calls itself, it actually talks about, it starts the beginning of the mission of enhancing understanding of Islam, encouraging dialogue, and then number three is protecting civil liberties and empower American Muslims and build coalitions and promote justice and mutual understanding. And we are here, first, for promoting justice, second, for mutual understanding and enhancing our liberties, all of us, not just American Muslims. Wanted to make sure that our concern as American Muslims is not unique, is not different from the concerns of everyone that's represented here. And in this occasion of honoring the memory and the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, the best way to honor that memory is to first remember the words, and second, live the actions and live the dream. I have to confess, everyone is talking about the concerns after the elections, and there are some real concerns, both in the Muslim community and other communities. My confession is, before the elections, I was half jokingly telling some of my friends that there is no way this person can be elected as president. And I actually told them, if this person gets elected, I am leaving. I can't live in the US anymore. Not because I was afraid, but because the country that elects this kind of person does not deserve for me to live in it. But our worst fear have happened. And as the ultimate optimist, they always call me, and again, taking inspiration from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that this current situation may be bleak and dark, but as Martin Luther King said, only the darkness, you can see the stars. And it's time for us to start being the stars and seeing the stars. Now, some of us were born here, and some of us came from somewhere else. But whether you were born here, or your ancestors came on a boat 300 years ago, or another boat 30 years ago, we are together in this boat, and we need to somehow find a way to make this boat float. And as a representative of American Muslims here, I have to say, we're not going anywhere. We are here to stay, and we're here to fight the good fight together with our brothers and sisters and partners. Now, we may have a new president on January 20th, but let me remind you, we don't have a new constitution. We still have the same old good constitution that protects our rights. And if anyone thinks about starting putting in place new policies or new laws that affect these rights, I only have one thing to say to them. See you in court with our partners. Again, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moment of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at time of challenge and controversy. And this is our time. It may be a time of discomfort, it may be a time of challenge, but we need to be the men and women that can stand up in this time of challenge and prove our mettle. Again, Dr. Martin Luther King said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. And every group that's facing the challenge, whether they are African Americans, whether they are immigrants, Latinos and others, or Muslims, or LGBTQ, or whatever group that is that's under threat, they are depending on others to stand up together and hold hands and support their rights, not be bystanders looking where somebody else is abusing someone in front of them. I remember, and I keep repeating this in every time I speak, when I attended the funeral of the three people that were killed in front of the Jewish Community Center, one of the speakers there said, those people that abuse or bully or discriminate against people, they are really bullies at heart. And the only way we can stop bullies is when you see someone being bullied, you step in front of them. They're always assuming the person they are bullying is weak, and they prey on the weak. Whether they are weak or not doesn't matter. But when we see bullying in front of us, we need to step in and say, they may be weak, but you don't get to them except through me. I'll end by leaving you with two words or two quotes from, again, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He said, I have a dream that one day little black boys and girls will be holding hands with little white boys and girls. Let me expand that dream. I dream that one day little boys and girls of every race, every color, every religion, and every creed or persuasion will be holding hands together with one another and joyfully playing in peace without fear or hatred. Dr. Martin Luther King said, we must come to see that the end we seek is a society at peace with itself, society that can live with its conscience. And finally, he also said, justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and it's up to all of us to stop it. Thank you very much.
My name is Karen Curls. And my brothers and sisters, the plight of the minority communities that have been up here before I share basically the antithesis of what King called as it relates to the beloved community. King's vision, when he talked about the beloved community, was one where racism, discrimination, bigotry, prejudice would be replaced. And it would be replaced by what? Inclusion, sisterhood, and brotherhood. Now, this didn't mean that there wouldn't be a struggle. Because as African American people, we know struggle real well, whether it was Donald Trump or whoever it was, we know struggle. That's not something new to us. Not something new to us. And history has shown us that even in a beloved community, there is going to be conflict. And with that conflict, how it's overcome is by tenacity, based upon well-informed and determined people. But there's something else that King talked about as it relates to his beloved community. It's not only tenacity, it is not only being well-informed, it is not only being determined, but it is being spiritual. Because we know when it's all said and done, whose wheelhouse we really in, don't we? Don't we? Do I get an amen? Don't we know? So when we start looking, and I want to give you just a couple of examples of the determination that we find within beloved communities. Someone talked about Selma, and I think it was you, Micah. And Selma, when you go and you stand on that Edmund Pettus Bridge, and you stand there and you see and you know that there was a Bloody Sunday, and you know there was a turnaround Tuesday before, on the third try, they were able to make it from Selma to Montgomery. A determined, well-informed, spiritual people. We know in August of 1965, a determined, well-informed people got these Voting Rights Act signed and passed. Now, we can apply these particular principles of a beloved community to Kansas City. In making Kansas City livable, you have to have many processes. And some of those means have been a tax. Taxes are repressive, and generally, those who benefit the least are the ones who come out in droves to make sure that it's passed. And part of the reason that they do that it stems back in time when people couldn't vote, or they were beaten or killed for trying to vote. And so in that spirit of the beloved community, we continue to look at voting and taxes as we go about the business of seeking a balance and inclusion. In Kansas City, we've had innumerable taxes over the last 10 to 15 years. Two of the taxes are the stadium tax and the zoo tax. If the data is correct from the election board, overwhelmingly, African Americans who overwhelmingly voted for both of those taxes. However, if we were to survey just you in this room, and I were to ask, how many of you all really go out and utilize the stadium, African Americans as a collective? And if you're 55 and older, I'm not going to ask for any hands, but if you're 55 and older, you would think back and you would say, well, when Michael Jackson and his brother came for the victory tour, we all came there as a collective. Or what you would say, well, when Bootsy was out there and it was a concert, it went for 24 hours, it seemed like it was 2 days, and we were all in Arrowhead waiting for the mothership to land. That's when we were there collectively. Collectively. But people voted for the tax who don't benefit. But see, that's not the prereq for a beloved community. Because when King was talking about it, he realized that different people were going to basically benefit at different levels. If we asked about the zoo tax, and Reverend Howard talked about the zoo tax in his introduction this afternoon, and if we were to poll school children and to ask them, how often do your parents bring you to the zoo? Those young people might say, well, we probably come around Halloween when they have boozoo. So again, the beloved community doesn't have to benefit all people at the same level. Now, as part of the struggle with Kansas City's beloved community, there is a need on the east side to balance the west side. Our city's swagger is off. As the west side shows strength and vibrancy, the east side is anemic and it's limping. The swagger's off. In the same determining spirit of King and all the other brothers and sisters who throughout the years and up to today understand the challenges and benefits of what the beloved community means, then they understand that the east side in Kansas City today, right now, is asking for an effort towards recovery. We've got to begin healing ourselves, healing it as it relates to housing, goods and services, job opportunities, and the reduction in crime. And with all things, there's a cost. Now, as there was a cost for the stadium improvement, whether all people use it, some people use it, or none of us enjoy it, there was a cost for the zoo, and the zoo houses various animals. It creates kind of that jungle atmosphere for residents and visitors alike to experience that, you know, feeling like you're kind of in Africa. There is also a cost to stabilize the inner city on the east side of Truce, and that's in the form of an eighth of a cent sales tax, because on the east side of Truce, we have our own jungle song. Some of you might know it, and before I take my seat, I'm going to say, actually give the chorus of it from those great prophets, Grand Master Flash and the Furious Five, and it goes like this. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Thank you.
To pull this mic down since I'm the tallest person up here. Good afternoon. My name is Margaret May, and I have the blessing and privilege of serving in the Ivanhoe neighborhood for the past 15 years. Ivanhoe, like much of the center part of the city and the area that we're talking about that is going to be the focus of the 1/8 cent sales tax, has been without for many, many, many years. But we had a blessing in Ivanhoe that came about as a result of the people who live there standing up and fighting some drug houses and showing what the people could do. And as a result of that, getting the attention of the Kauffman Foundation, which provided some funding to Ivanhoe. And as a result of having had some funding, very important part of being able to revitalize this part of the city, we have been able to do some pretty dramatic things. We're well on our way to bringing about some progress in the neighborhood. I frequently say we've come a long way, baby, but we still have a long way to go. But it was having some money to get started that made a major difference. The Ivanhoe neighborhood's biggest problem at the moment, We've worked hard to get it cleaner, and we work with the police to improve the crime statistics and to close drug houses and do all those kinds of things. We work to engage our residents so that they're just not sitting asking, but they're getting up doing what they can for themselves. But we have vacant land and vacant houses. About 40% of the neighborhood is vacant. Now, I'm aware that there are neighborhoods within this target area that have even a larger vacancy rate than Ivanhoe has. In order for us to have a vibrant city, we have got to have a means of addressing this vacancy. So I was at the Urban Summit meeting when the conversation was started about the 1-8 cent sales tax. And immediately, wheels started to turn in my head about the potential for bringing about the change that we need in Ivanhoe and that's needed in this general targeted area. You know, we can wish and we can work, but if we don't have some money to bring about change, we're going to be sitting with the same condition that we've had. So I am a strong proponent of the 1-8 cents sales tax. I feel that it's something we must do for ourselves. I think it's appropriate to ask, and I think that we have through the years been doing that to some degree, sometimes with success, but not often enough with success. But when we actually step up to the plate and stand up and have the means by which to do some things and be in control of things being done in our community, then change actually will occur, as opposed to many times when there have been efforts to raise money that we've been asked to support, and money has been raised, but guess what? Quite often through the various taxes, money doesn't come our way. It's diverted another way. This tax is specific to the target area. That's the only place that the money can be spent. So now I want to say a little bit about the sales tax and the importance of all of us, those present here and those that we associate with, be it our church, our communities, our clubs, wherever. We need to be talking this up, and we've got to get people out to vote in April to make sure that this passes. And it isn't going to be possible to do the advertising that is needed for this across the community to make sure people have the information that they need. We can't just wish they're going to come. We're going to have to make sure people have information. I don't know about you. I don't vote for something if I don't feel informed about it. So we've got to take the time and have the means by which to make sure people are informed. And that's going to take a few dollars. So I've got a check here that I've made since this started with the Urban Summit. I'm donating $100 to the Urban Summit. Nobody asked me to do this, and nobody asked me to do this at this point, but I'm taking the initiative to do this, and I'm hoping you'll follow my lead and donate some money to the Urban Summit that can be used to be able to get this word out so that we can be effective in April. It isn't going to just happen if we don't work at it. And we're going to need to have the means by which to do that. So I urge each one of you here to participate in this and also to share that information with others. And let's make sure that we get this passed so that it can bring about the change that we need. We can be in the driver's seat, in control of this, making sure it happens, and not wishing that somebody else would do something for us. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Maxwell. I am a businessman. I am a developer. 8 cent sales tax is extremely important. It's an opportunity for us as a community to come together and look at an inventory of what we need in our community. And then there's hope that we might be able to put something together to make a difference in our community. It's hope that we can identify business opportunities and bring them to our community. It's hope that we can employ people from our community. There's hope that we can provide training to our young people so that they can take advantage of the jobs that are created. So often in our community, we create a job or there's an opportunity. It really doesn't make a whole lot of difference because our young people don't get an opportunity to participate in it anyway. It goes over their head. But with the 8th cent sales tax, there's an opportunity for us to make decisions or participate in the making of decisions about what happens on the east side of Truce. I've got some illustrations set up over here on the side. And these are illustrations of some projects that we are working on right now. It doesn't do us any good to get the money and don't have any projects, because there's somebody from outside the community that's going to come in and have projects that they can use the money for. And so often that goes over our head. We think that, well, the city council people, they ought to do something about this. Our county legislators ought to do something about this. Well, it's not them that have to do something about it, it's us. If we don't take to them something that they can use the legislation to leverage money to our community, it doesn't do any good. We can't expect them to create jobs, you know? They can only assist us in creating jobs. The Linwood Shopping Center used to be the St. Joe Hospital. And for all those folk who are over 50, I'm sure you remember it very well. But the St. Joe Hospital sat there for about 10 years, blighted, the most blight we'd ever had in our community. Matter of fact, we purchased that site for $1. It was in that bad a condition that they wanted to get rid of it. So they sold it to us for $1. And I say us, I'm talking about the Baptist Ministers Union and the Community Development Corporation. And with that, we had to figure out how to get rid of the blight. City stepped in, helped us, and we were able to ultimately remove the blight. Then it was a charge. What do we do with it? And the community cried out, we want a shopping center. We want a grocery store. We want retail stores. And so that's what we were able to do. Now that has fallen on hard times, very hard times. And so consequently, I was in retirement and I had some people like Karen Curls here who worried me to death about coming back and let's do something about it again. So 2 years ago, we started working on the redevelopment. And what you see here is an illustration of what that new shopping center is gonna look like. We formed a partnership with the city. City has taken a major step in allocating financing to help us do a new shopping center in the heart of our community that will have a first-class grocery store, that will have first-class retail outlets. Some of the just for information's sake, a week ago, I signed a lease with Pizza Hut. So Pizza Hut will be coming to the shopping center. Within the next 2 to 3 months, hopefully I'll sign an agreement. We're negotiating with Wendy's. They will be coming to our community. We're negotiating with a bank right now to build a bank at the corner of Linwood and Prospect. And we're working with ATA on the development of a hub center at 31st and Prospect. All these are anchors. And once we get the anchors in place, we can start to bring in other small businesses. But the problem we have is that we don't have equity capital. We don't have the money to put down. We don't have the money to leverage other money into our community to create businesses so we create the jobs that we give to people from our community. We're always looking for someone else to come into our community and do it for us. And before I sit down, I just tell you something that when I was a kid, my grandmother used to, when I would act up, I'd have to go sit on the porch with her. I didn't like that. But she had a friend named Mrs. Tivis, and they talk about how bad we were. Say, them boys of yours are so bad, Ms. Ron. Yeah, we were. But she said, you never know which one of them boys might do something to make a difference in our community. And I've grown up always hearing my community talk about they ought to do something about this. Why don't they do something about it? Why they let this happen in our community? Well, it ain't a matter of they, it's us. We have to make those kind of determinations. We have to get up off our behinds and make something happen. That shopping center, I was told I could never make it happen. I was refused by 82 banks. 82 banks said, no, we want financing. I had to go all the way to New York to find financing to start a project in the heart of our community. And I'm running into the same kind of problems now. We're getting ready to do the east side of the west side of Prospect, as you see there, is set. Now we're working on the east side, where the bank is at, right across the street. I've purchased the two shopping centers there. Now it's a matter of going through the whole process again of getting local financial institutions and incentive programs to work with us to do the same thing. The 8-cent sales tax can help us do those kind of things. It can help businessmen identify opportunities and come forward and participate. That's the only way we create jobs for ourselves in our own community. And with that, I say thank you.
Right now, I invite you to come to one of the microphones. There are three microphones here. If you have any questions for our panel members, please make your questions brief.
I have a question on the sales tax. I know it's very regressive, but when Alan Wheat was in, he was the one who brought in the TIF that was supposed to go to blighted areas. Why did it never go to these blighted areas? Is there any way we could get TIF money? And sales, we need more money. But why can't we get some TIF money? It all went to the plaza and other places and the crossroads and places they don't need it.
I'm not saying whether the plaza needs it or not. I don't think that's the issue. I think, and I hear what you're saying regarding Alan, and the reality is we're trying to look at a balanced city, a beloved community. And even though TIF has a particular role that it plays, and it's tax increment financing is what the TIF stands for, and we will have it in some of the developments. But the reality of it is that we have so much need on the east side of Truce that it won't take just one entity or two entities. It's gonna take a real concerted effort to really make a change. And that's why the eighth of a cent. And we're not saying 8 cents, we're saying 1/8 of a cent. I mean, that's what we're asking for. That equates to about $8 million a year. That's what it equates to. And we're looking at that money leveraging other money. But the need is so great, we need to bring in as many tools and resources as possible.
I might want to say that the shopping center that you see in front of you, it's a TIF project. So that is a project that's happening in our community where TIF is being used. It's been, in my opinion, misused in other sections of our community because it was originally designed to work in this community. It just has not worked very well because we have not been able to leverage the projects and leverage other capital to make it work.
Good afternoon. Just want to thank you all for so much insight. I enjoyed and appreciated everyone's story and everybody's commitment to the work that we need to do in our community. I am Dr. Dina Irvin. I have the pleasure of serving as the executive director for the W.E.B. Du Bois Learning Center down the street. I'm also the founder of an organization, Black and College Bound, and what we do is we try to get young people to understand that it's more than just going to college and taking a few classes and walking across the stage if you can't add value and you can't be an innovative, creative thinker. I want to hear from you all, what are you doing to engage people ages 16 to 30? Because as we look at the timeliness of getting out this urgent message, as we look at informing, being in an informed, beloved community, what are we doing to get those people who can help us because they were born on social media, they stay on social media all day long, and they can help reach far more people than flyers or foot soldiers can?
Dr. Irving, that is an excellent suggestion, and we will be talking with you on how we can best get to those young people to help with this. We're going to need everyone.
I'm going to invite one of our interns, AFSC interns, to come up and share a little bit about a project we're doing with that age group right now. Anyone here like to share how you're engaging teenagers and young adults?
Is this on? So can you guys hear me?
I have an issue about it.
So what we're doing at El Centro is we actually give a list of scholarships. One of the things that is very, very, very important to me is the ability for our DACA students or those undocumented students to go to college, because that is one way to in the future hopefully obtain some kind of residency. So we are giving them scholarship opportunities. We tell them, well, there's a group of students who go out and say, hey, this is how we do it when we didn't have any documents. So that is in my priority list. It is one of the things that I'm very passionate about, education and getting them out there. And we do use social media for that. We are very involved, at least I am very involved in social media, and that's how we get people to connect with other students.
So at the ACLU, we have a large group of students and young adults who are engaged, who care a great deal about the issues that we work at the ACLU. But the first and most important way that we engage them is by asking them what it is they care about, rather than just assuming that what we care about is what they care about. And I think that's true no matter the age group, that we should be asking people what it is they want us to do, what we can do together, rather than just thinking that by sitting in my little office all day, I can figure out what people need and want. If you start from that place, you're always going to wind up in the wrong place. And so I think that's the most important tool to engaging young people, is making sure that we are actually responsive to their issues, to their passions, not just to mine.
At the Council of American Islamic Relations, we concentrate on building future leaders, and we try to reach them as early as we can. And every year, we have a series of leadership training classes or courses, sometimes during the school year and mostly during the summer. And we concentrate in getting to understand where they stand in the community, what are the issues surrounding them, how can they become active members in dealing with those issues on an everyday basis in their school, and in the street, and at home, and working with our organizations and other organizations. And we are seeing the results of those young leaders coming through the ranks and actually taking the banner and walking with it in every aspect we can imagine.
Hello, everyone. My name is Aaliyah McBride. This is Hope and Raven. We are interns with AFSC for the whole school year. And so some of the things that we do is we reach out to different organizations in high schools in the Kansas City area, and we talk to them about different social justice issues. So we had, in the fall, we had a poster project where we would go into area schools and talk to them about different issues that they are concerned about. Things that they want to help out with in their community are things that they notice that they want to be changed. So we'll talk to them and we'll encourage them to create posters about the different issues that they are passionate about. So in December, we had a traveling exhibit. We had one at Bruce R. Watkins, Crystal Ray High School, the Bauer Institute for First Fridays, and So we had traveling exhibits there where all of the students' artwork were displayed with all of their issues. On this table, the AFSC table, there are a couple of postcards of some of the posters that were there from the traveling exhibit. This upcoming from now until March, we'll be doing a spoken word piece with them. So we'll be reaching out to different area organizations and high schools. So if any of you guys have any contact information, definitely come and stop by. With our spoken word piece, we'll be using spoken word to help express to the students, allow for the students to express to their community and their organizations and schools about the different issues that they are passionate about and about change that they want to see. So if you guys are interested or know anyone who is interested, definitely stop by. We would be glad to join.
Thank you. Okay.
There's one more piece that I wanted to add to that. We do Saturday youth meetings where we have high school students actually come to the AFAC house, and we do like a workshop from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. or however long we need to go, so that students are, one, aware of their environment, because a lot of them do come from underprivileged areas and don't know that. They just know that's where they're from. They are very intelligent, though, and they can identify that, like, Lee Summit or Blue Springs looks different than my area, but they don't know why. So we really work with the students to identify why Kansas City looks the way it does, and that, one, it's not an accident, and two, that they can fix it. So if you have any students that would be interested in those kind of workshops, we do let them decide how it goes, so it's not a dictatorship at all. It's all student-led. Let us know. We'll be at the table. So thank you.
How about here in the center?
I'm Henry Stover with PeaceWorks, and I welcome these kind of forums because they bring so many of us together so that we can listen and understand. But I question, if we truly want a beloved community, if we truly want a beloved community, would we tolerate the 125 people that died last year? Would we tolerate the number of weapons that we have in our households? Would we tolerate the young persons who are just hanging out on street corners, and the drugs in our community? There is a valid reason why people do not want to come this far east, but we have to engage each other's. It is a chance for us as to whether we truly live what we truly believe. And I would like to say, this coming Friday at 10:30 at All Souls Unitarian Community Church, there will be another forum. At that time, Trump and Pence will be sworn in. And these same kinds of persons and others will be there to ask the questions, what is going to happen? What impact will there be on this community? What are our ideas for positive, constructive action? We cannot just simply remain in our chairs, our pews. We are one beloved community. We must show it. We must go to congressional offices. We must turn to our neighbors. We must ask the difficult questions. And again, thank you, each of you, for your love and concern.
My name is Murray Anderson, and the name of my company is TaylorMade Visions. I'm the CEO. In addition, I own the Visionary Impact Theater, which is located in Kansas City, Kansas, at 1017 North 6th Street. What I'd like to do is to speak to what Mr. Maxwell had stated that is of critical importance, and that is, he spoke about the fact we must have equity capital, that we need access to equity capital in order to be able to fund the dreams and expectations of micro businesses and small businesses, as well as businesses that can in fact scale up. The project there at 31st and Prospect, Don, you probably don't remember me because I used to have hair okay? But creates a great opportunity. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City has an enormous program and strategy called Econ Avenue, which largely has been ignored by the community at large, and I'm talking about the folks in the greater metropolitan area. I've been working with the Federal Reserve Bank in Kansas City, Kansas for the last 3 years in the community development initiative called Econ Avenue. Now, with that said, our problem and also the opportunity, one thing is we have to own the problem, but we also must own the solution. And that solution rests in having equal access to credit and capital. Under the Federal Reserve Act of 1934, 13.3, it provides a window of opportunity for us to gain access, equal access, to credit and capital. Here's our real problem. The most powerful financial institution ever to exist on the face of the earth is called the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. We have a president now, President-elect Trump, who understands, in fact, leverage. We also must understand and put our minds around leverage. We also must be able to fit in the box, in the credit box, in the capital box. Now, what that means is this, is that under 13.3, there is an enabling language that defines, that says that the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System can act and solve a problem in any community, in any space in the economy, if they deem that unusual exigent circumstances exist. Here's the problem. The community, and particularly the African American living east of Troost, the economic experience that we have is not defined as a part of that definition. So the Federal Reserve Bank has no reason, has no cause to act. This is the truth. We are in discussion with the office of Janet Yellen as we speak to have the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System vote as to whether or not the zip code of 66101 in Kansas City, Kansas, in fact, fits the definition based upon our economic experience of unusual exigent circumstances. Now, because the Great Recession existed, the Federal Reserve Bank and the Treasury had to become very creative. The enabling language that empowered the Board of Governors, Chairman Bernanke, to act and stabilize the global financial system was unusual exigent circumstances. Those circumstances still exist in our community, but our experience is not a part of that definition. And that's what our real problem is. Don, I'd like to join with you to help you with your project. I'd like for you to join with us and with me to help us move this agenda forward, because we cannot change a community and transform a community with loans that are highly leveraged, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, and we cannot change and transform our community with grants alone. We must create a seed and venture capital fund that can in fact fund the dream, because somebody has to fund the dream. That's our problem. It's not a social problem. It's an economic problem. And the consequences that we experience as a result of that problem is that we are not identified. Our economic experience is not identified, which means that black lives don't matter at the top of the food chain. We have to change that narrative, and we're in the best opportunity to do that today than what we have ever been. And I appreciate y'all's time. Okay. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the commentary. And I'd be more than glad after the meeting to give you my card and let's talk. The 8-cent sales tax is one of the incentives that would become very important in leveraging additional capital. And there are a number of incentive programs. Our problem has been being able to get our arms around those programs, use them to leverage capital, and then creating a relationship with financial institutions. Almost every project I've ever built, and there's been over 70 of them, I've had some soft money, and I've also had some financial, some bank financing associated with the project as well. So afterwards, if you would, let me exchange cards with you, set up a meeting, be more than glad to talk to you about how we might take advantage of the Federal Reserve Program.
Please keep your comments brief.
Hi, I'm Judy Ansel, and I'm here. I want to say something about economic justice. We all know that Martin Luther King was assassinated during a strike. Strike of Memphis sanitation workers, low-wage workers who could not get recognition for their union, which was part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. But Martin Luther King wasn't just supporting that strike. Martin Luther King understood that if we don't fight for economic justice, we haven't completed the struggle for equality. And many people think that that's one of the reasons why he was taken out. Well, we haven't completed the struggle for economic justice, and as a matter of fact, things are getting worse. The Trump administration is filled with people who are not friendly to those of us who have to work for a living. I would add that in Missouri, we now have a state government that is threatening to take away workers' rights in a very, very serious manner. We're facing a right to work bill that is most certainly going to pass, and we're going to have to fight back. Our state legislators have no interest at all in raising the state's minimum wage, and they're going to attack workers' comp so that people won't be able to even be compensated well for when they are injured on the job, and there are many other threats. The Trump administration may be sponsoring a national right to work bill, and certainly his appointees to the National Labor Relations Board and to the courts will not be friendly to workers' rights. And so this is an issue which is, you know, really, really important to most of us. I'm part of Kansas City's Jobs with Justice, which has a table right here, which is going to be fighting against those things. And I really urge you to take that into consideration. We work a lot with the Fight for 15, the movement here to organize fast food and other low-wage workers. We need good jobs. And while I think it's really important that we attack issues like food deserts, I would add that I would hope that this sales tax, if it passes, can promote something more than jobs at Pizza Hut or Burger King or Wendy's, because those are lousy jobs, and our communities, all of us, deserve good jobs that pay a living wage. And so I hope that all of you really pay attention to what's going on as far as our economic justice right and our rights as working people are concerned, because we're in for it and we need to fight back. Thank you.
Well, just a response. I think that the 8th of a cent sales tax goes beyond just the jobs, because jobs are stratified. And so we're looking at all kinds of jobs. But in order to have jobs, you've got to have some activities taking place on the east side of Truce. You have to have buildings being built. You have to have resources that are coming in. So it's more of a collective. The 8th of a cent sales tax is looking at stabilizing a community that has been forgotten for so long. So we hear an economic justice is something that is important. Just like we're seeing on the east side of Truce, economic rage that lends itself to criminality. So when we start talking about this, we're looking at it as a comprehensive approach to an area that has been woefully neglected for a very, very long, long time. So we appreciate your comments, and we look forward to working with you.
Okay, these will be our last three questions. Who is waiting longest?
Me.
Me.
I'm the oldest.
Okay, I'll go with the ladies first. Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Mrs. Robinson. And first, I would like to ask you, I would like to get a card from all of you all. We don't know where your cards are, if you have one. And I would personally like to come and visit and speak with all of you individually, just myself, because I have enjoyed what you had to say. And, you know, it's really needed, especially, I hate to single out someone, but you, the guy with the civil rights, I'm in love with you right now. So I really want to talk with you. But the main reason that I'm up here is I have an organization called Teach a Man to Fish, and I had you have a person on your panel that gave me a chance in 2014 to teach a man to fish. First, let me back up. Teach a man to fish is I'm an advocate for children from like 14 to 18, they're kind of like dropouts, and they're the ones, they don't get suspended from school. They kind of just leave on their own. And then we don't know where these children are. They just out there. So I kind of found some of them. I had like 14 of them. And I was in, Mr. Maxwell gave me a chance in his building, but I did not have enough funds to keep these children going. And I've been trying to do this here program ever since 2012. And I can't ever find anyone to help back me up to kind of save these children, because we're having all these killings and all these guns. And I, you know, we all get together here, but after we leave here, we don't see one another. It's all, you know, this, like the guy was saying, that just recently left. How can we all come together, stay together, have townhouse meetings once a month, twice a month, or something? But we have to get together, because if we want to save these children, this is our future. And one reason I couldn't keep it going, I didn't have the funds, I didn't have a van, and I would go around because I see all this beautiful stuff on Christmas and Thanksgiving, and they give people vans. But when you go to them and you have a real life thing that you're talking about, everyone look at you like you're crazy. But on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and you stroke people for that little month, but what about 365 days out of the year? So I'm just saying, help me. My name is Carolyn Robinson. Our organization is Teach a Man to Fish. I have had several people in here that have stuck with me and are still with me, but we lose the children because there's no funds. I can't keep bringing the money out of my pocket. And, you know, let's help one another like we are saying. And Ms. Margaret May, I really need to come see you, because if there's some kind of way you can help me get a house, please, you all, I am begging. Don't let me lose the 15 or 14 I already have, because our children out there are dying on the bridges. They're eating anything out of the trash cans. Their parents are incarcerated. Let's not forget our future. That's our future that is getting totally ignored. You know, and I'm feeding them as much as I can, but I am a single woman. My husband got killed in the service. And so I'm just out here by myself also. So I thank you, I love you, and please let me get your cards, and don't you leave. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Ann?
Can I respond really quickly? Which is just that first I want to thank you for what you're doing, and not just for those 14 or 15, but for the hundreds that are coming on behind them. Because I think we also have to be honest about the fact that folks are being pushed out of school, right? They're not leaving for no reason oftentimes. They are being pushed out. The school-to-prison pipeline is a real thing. It's not just a fancy word. It's not just something somebody made up. It's a real thing. And it's about to get a lot worse here in Missouri because the state legislature passed a law last year that said that if you get in a little fight at school, a little playground squabble, you can go to jail for a felony. That's crazy. There's no other word for it. It's crazy. And I think we can say with all confidence that I don't care what some of the school administrators and folks say that it's not a big deal. It's a big deal to get charged with a felony. And it's not just a big deal for right now. It's not just the experience that you have right now. It's that marker that carries with you for the rest of your life. So we all have to be in it together to address those issues as well.
Okay. It's really time to close, but these three questions are our last. Please make your comments brief. Reverend Mann?
First of all, let me just say, this is wonderful. I'm the vice president of SCLC. I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. Give yourself a big round of applause. And the care in the hearts and the thoughts in the mind have been just excellent. I'm really happy for this. And somebody just said we meet here once a year and then we go back and we come back and we meet, we don't do anything. Well, we purposely designed this celebration to do something. We ain't just about memorializing Dr. King, we're about actualizing him. You understand what I'm talking about? And that's what this 8-cent sales tax is. It's got some stuff on it. Now, some people say a sales tax is regressive. This one ain't, because the money stays here, and it's the community helping itself. And so I hope that you'll get involved in this thing. Now, another thing SCLC has done, and I liked somebody who just brought it up about the workers, we filed a petition election. You all know what a petition election is. That's where you go out and get the signatures and put something on the ballot. And we filed for $15 an hour. Did y'all know that, the SCLC? And we are before the Supreme Court as we speak. How many knew that? We're standing before the Supreme Court for $15 an hour. And the Supreme Court is taking it up. Now, what I think about this is, those are two meat and bones, nuts and bolts, walking and talking things to do. You understand what I'm talking about? We ain't just sitting here feeling good, memorializing, remembering. We going into the future. So I hope that we can get together on these two things. So if you need to if you're interested in them and want to do something, come on, let's go. Now, last thing I want to say, I'm sorry about it, but the 75% of them guns, the shooting things, incidents happen in this corridor that we have identified for this 8-cent sales tax. You didn't hear me. And we know there's a direct relationship between poverty and shooting. There's a direct relationship. Am I right or wrong? So poverty gets, you get poverty when you get jobs. You get rid of it. That's what this is an attempt to do, to save this money. And the whole town put some money in here, And you know, I'm a preacher. I don't love money, but you got to have it. Am I right or wrong? Would you rather be with money or out of money? With money, of course, especially in this country. But let's see if we can't get together on some of these things that matter and don't just make us feel good. Am I right or wrong? So thank you, Ira.
Thank you. And where do people sign up?
Sign up what? For what?
For helping with the 8 cents?
Right there, right there.
Okay, right over there.
Right there. And if you want folks to come talk to your organizations, we do that, the whole thing. But this has got meat and bones to it. We ain't just going to meet here and then it's over with. Am I right or wrong?
Yes, right.
God bless you. I love y'all.
Okay. One more over here and then last over here.
This may be a naive question in the face of the school-to-prison pipeline, police brutality, neighborhood violence, but the word that Dr. King used probably more than almost any other word was the word nonviolence. And so what is the role of nonviolence in economic social justice? We asked this to our students, and they said, well, we're not really sure nonviolence has relevance today in light of what many people have said. But we did ask them, well, what do you want to do? And so they asked us, we want to hear from local organizations. And so at Abilene University on February 9th, Stand Up KC, One Struggle KC, many other organizations, Center for Conflict Resolution, are coming together to address this question. Is there a vision for peace and justice on Troost and around Troost? And is it one that involves relations of nonviolence? And this was a question that the students came up with, because to them, it's a question of, are we past that language, or is this still a viable reality?
Okay. And when is that, and where is that?
This is at Avila University on 119th and Warnell on February 9th. And we're going to have Bingo on the Boulevard, a dramatic reading of a play by Donna Ziegenhorn on February 8th at 6 p.m.
Thank you. And our last question.
I would first like to commend the organizers for this occasion. There are a wide variety of issues that plague our communities. And I think it's a very good thing that there is a movement afoot to develop a prioritized agenda where we might come together with all of our diverse views and try to provide some organization and some structure to our efforts. And I would want to suggest that at the top of the priorities should be prayer. Dr. King was first and foremost a preacher. Somewhere I read that if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, then will I hear from heaven and forgive their sin and heal their land. With all of the great ideas that we are purporting, I would suggest to you that we should not forget to pray.
I want to again thank each of you for being here. I want to thank Friendship Baptist Church for being here, the SCLC for partnering with the American Friends Service Committee, and all the organizations represented at the tables, and actually following our elders' guidance. Why don't we just have a moment and in your own way express your prayers or hopes that our beloved community can be strengthened and nourished and flourish. Thank you.